Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. Today we're joined by State Representative Democrat Rocky Atkins from Morehead, the House Minority Leader. And Rocky, always good to have you on the program.
Chuck, it's good to be back with you. I hope you're doing well.
Well, I am, and it looks like you're doing well. I mean, always very prosperous as a member of our legislature, and I won't say why, because otherwise people might ask questions.
Well, it's good to be out of Frankfort. It's good to be back home, and a very contentious session this past session, and I know we're going to talk about that some, but to kind of open up the show, I was very moved by the engagement of thousands of people from across Kentucky this time, who not only got involved back in their local communities, but also by the thousands came to Frankfort, Kentucky this time, the education community, public employees from all across Kentucky were engaged back home and legislators' district, educating them, rallying them to stand up for public education in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And that engagement was really moving. I have never seen Kentucky energized the way it was in the weeks and months past by our teachers and our school bus drivers, our janitors, our cooks, our public employees who came to Frankfort, the education community, and rallied legislators in Frankfort, not only standing up for their profession that they love so much. Some of the most respected people in our communities are teachers, without question. I think back on my life, outside of my parents, my grandparents, my immediate family, who had the most impact in a positive way on my life, and it was school teachers, without question. So to see them stand up, get off the sideline, get in the game, get involved in the process, have a voice in the process, try to basically tell what direction decisions would be made in Frankfort, Kentucky. I want to thank them for that involvement. I want to thank them for coming to Frankfort, Kentucky. That Capitol building is the people's house, and it was good to see, as I said, thousands come to Frankfort, Kentucky lobbying, having a voice, being engaged in the process. That was true democracy that I enjoyed seeing, and true democracy as it ought to happen.
Well, the one thing I think that did happen because of that, initially when the governor had presented his spending proposal for the next 2 years, his
yes.
budget plan, there were some real cuts to the pensions in many ways, including the cost of living or the COLA adjustment.
Yes.
And it was going to go from 1.5% to 70.75%.
That's right.
And I believe that those voices were heard because the dial was moved back quite a bit from where the governor had started it.
No question. Without the engagement, without the involvement of the education community and public employees across Kentucky, there is no question we saw a pension recommendation that was made by the governor and consultants that he had hired that were drastic and extreme, without question. We saw a lot of those measures move back in a pension bill, and we can talk about the process of that here in a little bit. But there's no question, because of the involvement of the education community and public employees, the budget that the governor recommended, the pension bill that the governor recommended, and Senate Bill 1 that was recommended and introduced in the Senate, you know, there was a budget bill passed, but it wasn't as bad as the governor's budget. There was a pension bill passed, which I still think was a terrible pension bill that weakened the pension system, that was passed, but it still wasn't as bad as Senate Bill 1. And I truly believe without that involvement, without that lobbying effort, without that rally, without teachers bringing that strong voice for the future of public education in Kentucky, I think things could have been much worse.
I'll ask you this. When you talk about that, it made me wonder toward the end, because there were a lot of people who are putting a lot of pressure on legislators to not make drastic changes to the pension systems, that there was a bit of tax reform done at the end to provide money for the pensions, and I guess it was created about $500 million in new revenue. I think it gave about $190 million in tax breaks, I believe, something along that line. But do you believe that all that pressure is what forced the tax reform to maybe provide money for the pensions and thus avoid having to make the severe cuts that had initially been planned?
Well, Chuck, here's really what folks need to understand, and I'm going to talk about three major bills that were passed, and the pension bill, the budget bill, and the tax bill, the revenue bill. All three of those proposals, the last bill that came out of committee, so the last proposal that was passed on those three areas were passed without 1 second of public debate from the general public. Those bills, let me give you an example. The pension bill was a hastily called state government committee meeting that went in a side room of the Capitol. They took a bill that was a wastewater treatment bill. They stripped that bill, better known as the sewer bill, and put on a 291-page pension bill that basically the pages were still warm as it was handed out around the table of the state government committee of the House. I was in that meeting. I'm not on that committee, but I objected to how the process, the transparency, members understanding, reading that bill, understanding what it would do to impact the lives of people across Kentucky. And I objected on a statute that is very clear, and I read that statute as the chairman gave me the floor before he ruled me out of order, and I said, Mr. Chairman, you cannot move this bill out of committee. It is out of order, and the reason it's out of order, you cannot move a bill dealing with the pension systems or the retirement systems without an actuarial analysis. So there was no actuarial analysis, and the chairman of that committee ended up ruling me out of order, and I said, no, sir, Mr. Chairman, you're out of order. You're breaking the law. They voted that bill out of that committee to the House floor, and, of course, I made the same motion on the House floor, and the Speaker ruled me out of order. And for the first time in my 31 years, I challenged the ruling of the Speaker, and we lost that ruling, and the bill came to the floor. So here's what happened. 291 pages brought to a special called committee, hastily called committee, voted out of the House committee, to the House floor, to the Senate, on the governor's desk in the same afternoon. Same thing happened on the final version of the budget bill and the final version of the tax bill that the Republicans passed. Now, here's what I'm going to say about the tax bill that the Republicans passed without one Democrat voting for it. It's very partisan the way this session was handled. We were kept out of the room as the Democratic leader. This bill that was passed to raise the revenue is a very regressive tax policy. It basically gives tax breaks to the corporations and the most wealthy in Kentucky and shifts that tax burden to the hardworking middle class and working poor here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Yes, it did raise revenue, but it's a very regressive tax policy that we don't believe the revenues will come from that, but it's very unfair. So it's not really true tax reform when you don't put the tax burden on those most able to pay and basically make it fair across the board. So we were very opposed to that. There was a tax proposal that went through on the House side in the House version when we very first got started that not only restored the money for elementary secondary education, but Chuck, it also restored the 6.25% cut to higher education as well. And, you know, that basically was putting a quarter tax on opioids that were basically being distributed in Kentucky to pharmacies and all of that, and it also put 50 cents on a pack of cigarettes. We passed that through the House, and it had bipartisan support as it went through. And then the process as it went through the Senate, of course, turned into a very partisan, turned into basically not including a bipartisan effort of I didn't get one call asking our input, asking how we can make this more of a bipartisan approach. So I would tell you that those three major bills that ended up passing, the final version of those bills were passed without 1 second of general public debate. Matter of fact, the pension bill, not a teacher in the room able to sit at the table and say why this was not a good pension bill, how it weakened the pension system, especially for newly hired teachers, which you and I both know it's already hard to get teachers to come into the teaching field, and this is going to make it more difficult to get the most qualified, the best teachers in the classroom to teach our most precious resource, our children.
Well, let's talk. I guess there's so many elements, as you talked about, and they're all kind of woven together. Let's talk about the pension reform. in essence, that from what I've been told, and correct me, of course, if I am wrong, that the current benefits for those already retired have been protected.
That's right.
Those currently in the system, I guess they stay the same, but it's the new hires that will face what's called a hybrid cash balance system, which involves, I guess, some investing and things like that, and they have some choices. And from what I've been told, they can make up to 4% a year on their money, and there's a 0% floor. They can't lose money per year on this. And if there's anything that goes above that 4%, that money is put back into the system to protect against losses. So in your mind, though, what's the problem with that?
Well, here's the problem. You're right. For retirees, basically this bill does not impact them. But for current teachers, where it does impact is on the sick days. And the impact of the sick days basically can be accumulated to the end of this year, and then at the time of retirement can be used basically to enhance their retirement as they retire on their pension. After that time of this year for a current teacher, they'll only be able to accumulate those basically to use for sick leave. Well, people would say, well, that sounds fair. Well, look, teachers don't draw Social Security. And one of the big attractions to getting good people into the teaching field has been a defined benefit, knowing at the end of the day you got a guarantee, something you've been promised, something you paid into, and yes, the state has paid into as well, but something that you paid in to that you know you're going to have a good retirement at the end of your 27, 30, 35 years, whatever it is. And that's been a big attractor to get teachers, good qualified teachers, into the teaching field. Now, for newly hired teachers, this bill basically weakens that system. It takes it from a defined benefit, knowing what you're going to have, knowing that that's going to grow every year at a certain percentage, knowing at the end of the day this is what my retirement will be, to a system now that is a cash balance hybrid that basically guarantees 0% growth. You're not going to lose your money if you put it in, but it'll stay there. But there's no guarantee of any growth at the end of the day if the market doesn't grow. So that's going to basically make it tougher to attract teachers to come in when they don't have a guarantee of a defined benefit plan. There's been other states that have taken some of this approach, and they've come back to a defined benefit because at the end of the day, they see this pension bill that was passed in Kentucky really has no savings at the end of the day. It has no savings. It doesn't impact the unfunded liability that we have out there of about 30-some billion dollars, whatever the number is. So if you look at the unfunded liability, it really has very little impact on that, has very little savings. But over on the other side, we're weakening a pension system that's going to make it much more difficult to get teachers into the classroom. It also does away with the $5,000 death benefit, and it also does away with the inviolable contract, which is a big deal as you look at a guarantee, a promise. And I firmly believe that something that has been a big attractor to get public employees, to get good teachers in the classroom, highly skilled teachers in the classroom, has been a promise made is a promise that must be kept. The pension system that we currently have shows that if we stay on course where we are because of the 2013 reforms that we made, and we made those reforms coming out of the Great Recession, and when we made those reforms, we made some major revisions. One, we said we would fully fund the ARC above what the statutory mandate is, and we did that in the 14 and 16 budget. And because of that, we see the systems starting to recover. Matter of fact, last year alone, the growth of teacher retirement because of these reforms that we made, fully funding the ARC, putting the pension oversight board in place, and also doing this $3 million audit, we're watching the investments very closely from these firms. We have seen last year in teacher retirement, because of those reforms in 2013, we saw an 18.4% growth in the investments made back to teacher retirement. On KERS, the state retirement system, we saw a 15.5% growth. So the reforms we made in 08 and 13 are working. The key is that we continue to fully fund the ARC as we move forward. If you look at what was passed by Senate Bill 151, it will show you that over the next 20 years, because of this change, the unfunded liability will only be paid down by 42%. The current system that we had would show in KERS that over the next 20 years, if we had kept on path with the reforms we made in 13, that those unfunded liabilities would be paid down 72%. So I would tell you that these changes were not wise. They are not financially the right thing to do. They show very little savings. And on the other hand, we have weakened the pension system for new hires that, in my opinion, that are going to make it much tougher to recruit the highly skilled, highly trained, the best of the best educators and the best of the best public employees into public service and into public education.
So you're saying that there was no need to do any kind of reform on the pensions?
What people don't understand, and I talk about this every time I get a chance, people have forgot about the 2013 reforms. You know, and where our pension systems got hurt was that we had two crashes of the stock market, 2002 and 2008, in less than a 10-year period. Then we went into the greatest recession of mine and your lifetime. And now that we started coming out of that recession, we made some reforms in 2008. And we made more major reforms in 2013. We said then, from all the actuarial analysis that we had, that over the next 20 to 30 years, that if we stayed on the course and the path of the 2013 reforms, teacher retirement, which is already building back to almost 60% now funded, that's not where we want it, but it's growing back to now almost 60% funded, that over the next 15 years, they would be back to 85% or better in teacher retirement. In state retirement, we showed that if we stayed on that course, stock market continued to grow. We watched the investment of those firms that were being hired much closer, that we showed over the next 30 years that state retirement would start building out of their problems that they saw in the crash of the market as well and the Great Recession. So what I'm saying is we said then, and this was a bipartisan effort in 2013. Matter of fact, the majority leader in the Senate, a Republican, said this bill will save the pension systems of the Commonwealth of Kentucky for the future. That was the 2013 reforms. I'm telling you that we said then it would take 30 years to recover from the downturn in the market. We said then let's stay with the 13 reforms. Let's fully fund the ARC as we put that in statute. And we said then that if you do that, we're going to be able to get these pension systems back healthy and back strong. I would tell you, stay with those 2013 reforms, keep what we got fully funded as we move forward, and these pension systems will be strong and be very valuable and be there for people to count on in the future.
Again, we're talking with State Representative Rocky Atkins from Moorhead. I'm Chuck Morales on Front Page, back with more right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from The Bakery on Main, next to Pasquale's on East Main Street in Moorhead. The Bakery on Main prepares made-from-scratch breads, cakes, pies, tarts, and cookies. Glazed, cream, and fruit-filled donuts made fresh Monday, Friday, and Saturday. Catering for weddings, birthdays, bridal, and baby showers. Open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Orders by phone at 606-783-0101 and online at thebakeryonmain.com.
Welcome back to the Front Page. I'm Chuck Morales. Again, we're talking with House Minority Leader Rocky Atkins from here in Moorhead. We've been talking about the latest legislative session. And one thing we haven't talked a lot about yet is higher education, performance-based funding, which obviously Moorhead State will get no money this year, no money next year, cuts all across campus. People losing jobs, programs being eliminated, not a good situation.
Chuck, one of the reasons that I voted against the state budget, the first time I've done that in my political career, was because of the basically budget that was written and passed that is very inadequate, not acceptable for public education from elementary, secondary, and into higher education. You know, Moorhead State University is my alma mater. Moorhead State University sits in the middle of my legislative district. This budget implemented another cut of 6.25%. Now, that's bad enough, but if you want to talk about something that I think is even worse, is that instead of giving the universities their money back and eliminating that cut as we did in the House budget that went through, that I voted for when we went through the House budget. I voted for that budget because it restored all those cuts to elementary, secondary, and higher ed. Not all, but for higher ed it did for the 6.25% cut. But when it came back out of the conference committee, and basically they revealed that on a Monday morning, the very day that we passed it through the House, the Senate, and to the governor's desk, The 6.25% cut was back for higher ed. But not only that, instead of restoring the cut, there is this new funding formula, this new funding model called performance-based funding. And when I speak in crowds, I say, well, somebody please raise their hand and tell me what performance-based funding is. There's no hands go up. There's no hands go up. I sat in a meeting room in the 2016 session when we were writing the budget. We were still in the majority. And I got educated on this. And I said, well, if we're going to do any performance-based funding, first of all, you got to increase the funding of higher education, who has had cuts now for the last 4 to 6 budget cycles. There's not a state in the Commonwealth, there's not a state in the United States of America that has implemented performance-based funding without an increase to higher education.
Well, and part of this also is that, from what I understand, when you talk about performance-based funding elsewhere, it doesn't involve the base funding. It's on top of the base funding. That's the only state right now where it is. It impacts the base funding, right?
So here's what happened. When the Senate budget came back out and the conference committee budget came back out, that eventually was passed, and that was overridden by the House and the Senate after the governor vetoed it. There was performance-based funding included in this, $31 million put in each year of the biennium, basically labeled as performance-based funding. And that whole $31 million is in one pot of money, got all the universities competing against each other to try to get this money back out into their universities. That $31 million came right out of the base funding of universities across Kentucky. There was no increase in funding to higher education. The only thing that this performance-based funding does was took the base funding of universities out there that have already had cuts over the last several budget cycles, and they took that $31 million and said, yes, you comprehensives out there, like Morehead State University and Eastern and Kentucky State and all these comprehensive, we're going to have you competing against our two research universities of University of Kentucky and the University of Louisville. Well, Chuck, if we're going to do performance-based funding, first of all, let's understand what it is. And here's what it is. We got Morehead State University, my alma mater, who I'm proud to be a graduate of, serving basically a service region of East Kentucky that has seen a depopulation of our population because of the downturn in the coal economy. All you got to do is ask these school districts across East Kentucky how many students they've lost over the last 10 years. So you got a situation of performance-based funding basically that says that if you don't increase your degrees that you produce every year, then you don't share in performance-based funding whatsoever. You get none. You get zero of that money. So here we got a situation of Eastern. You're already reading what they're doing at Eastern, the cuts, the job loss, and all of that, cuts to programs, vital programs. Morehead State University going through a very similar situation, trying to make ends meet. And Morehead State University was put here for a reason. It was put here to serve the mountains, the hills and the mountains of Eastern Kentucky. It was put here to be an economic driver of having a highly skilled, a highly trained, a highly educated workforce. Matter of fact, there's been people say that Morehead State University is responsible for the middle class in Eastern Kentucky. So here Morehead is trying to do its job, and they've been put in a situation now to where they're trying to get enrollment up, where they're trying to get degrees that they produce. Look, we're not afraid of competition. Morehead State University can compete with anybody. But don't put us in a type of competition to where you're going to say that the increase of degrees produced at a time when you're trying to hold your enrollment where it's at is fair. So here Morehead State University sits, K-State, Kentucky State sits, two universities that basically are doing everything they can to hold their own and bring hope and opportunity to people, are forced now with these budget cuts and these tough situations like Eastern and Murray and everybody else, Chuck. And here's what they're going to get out of this $31 million. They're going to get $0 out of that and be faced with the situation now of trying to meet the same demands, and I know Morehead State University will.
All right. We're out of time. I wish we had more time, and we'll have you back for sure, Rocky. Appreciate the time this morning here on Front Page.
Chuck, the time goes fast. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed being with you. Thank you.
House Minority Leader Rocky Atkins of Morehead on Front Page today. I'm Chuck Moraz. See you next time.